And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to the 9 to noon show for this Tuesday morning. It's 4 minutes past nine. How are you all keeping? I do hope you're very well. And we look forward to having you on board the 9 to noon train, the only train running in Donegal today for the next 3 hours. You can give us a WhatsApp and a text to get involved in the show, 086 60 25000. If you want to give us a call, it's 074 91 25000. And emails come in to us at comments@highlandradio.com. And I was listening to Donald there on the news, and we covered it last night, the situation at Letterkenny University Hospital. Every bed yesterday evening was occupied, every single bed. So even people that were really quite sick and needed a bed were waiting on someone to leave before they could actually get into their bed. Elective surgeries being postponed, some of them. And elective surgeries sound like it could be a toenail removal. And I don't mean that in any way bad, but just those that don't know, some of those elective surgeries can be really, really quite serious. So I posted the information up. It was on the Highland socials, but also my own socials yesterday. And a lot of people affected by it. The post went absolutely crazy in terms of reach. And it seems a lot of people are blaming access to GPs for the situation at Letterkenny University Hospital. Now, when they talk about the hospital being overcrowded, sick people in beds, sick people in the ED, and having to discharge the sick people who are now well to allow people to go in. I mean, those are people that need to be in hospital, right? It's not a lot of people in there with scratches on their knees. So there certainly is a capacity problem in terms of the amount of beds that's available versus those that are needed. And a GP, attendance to the GP is not going to resolve that unless it's early intervention or some other preventative measure. But there seems to be an ongoing capacity crisis. Is that too strong a word? I hope not. And, you know, we're not in the flu season, are we? Are there any massive instances of stuff going around? I don't know. Maybe there is. But anyway, I just know that many of you commented on the various posts talking about your unpleasant experiences. I'll give you one example here of someone who messaged me. If I can find the message, just there was so much coming in last night, it was very hard to keep track of. But just the reality of the situation for some people. One of the people that you posted about in the hospital waiting to be admitted is my mother. She presented to the ED yesterday as a stage 4 cancer patient at 4 o'clock, and 24 hours later, she's still on a trolley in the ED waiting to be admitted to oncology ward as of no beds. So 24 hours in the ED, she presented as a stage 4 cancer patient, and 24 hours later, still on a bed in the ED. So that poor lady, you can imagine what she's going through, but also the families you watch on, very, very difficult. So hopefully the situation gets resolved down there, but it used to be very rare you'd get a press release from the HSE talking about how busy it was. Now they go into a bit more detail, and every single bed taken up and people having to be discharged before the sick, and some really quite sick can get in to a bed. So I wouldn't discourage anyone who needs to go to the ED from going to the ED, but they are prioritising those in need most, and I'm sure it's the same this morning as it was yesterday. As I say, if you want to comment on that, 086 60 25000 or give us a call on 074 91 25000. The Irish Times this morning, and a lot of papers running this story, and it is down to a massive liability coming down the tracks. We talked about this last year. It's back in the papers today. The state could soon be facing a colossal €26 billion in costs for missing EU-agreed climate targets, equivalent to a full year of corporation tax receipts or the annual health budget. A report by the Irish Fiscal Advisory Council and Climate Change Advisory Council provides one of the starkest warnings yet of the potential costs involved in failing to adapt to the climate reality. Now, we've been talking about this 2030 target for quite some time now, and there is, I can't really think of any massive inroads we seem to have made, and now it's less than 5 years away, and we are facing into this reality. We are bound by this. This is the law. We are going to overshoot the runway in terms of our targets. And the big cost comes in trying to buy credits from other countries that have achieved their targets or overachieved. The likes of Portugal, for an example, which many of you would be familiar with, they are far ahead of their targets. But we've an incredible amount of work to do here. And we can't complain our way out of it. We have tied ourselves into it as part of the EU. Well, this report found that the Republic, on a per capita basis, had the highest emissions target gap of EU member states, meaning it was the least likely to meet its 2030 target of reducing emissions by 51% on the basis of its current trajectory. And I'll give you an idea, in case you're not fully familiar, as to how long we've been talking about this. Do you remember when there was talk about getting 1 million electric cars on the road by 2030? That was part of this. So you'll know that's going back years and years, and you'll see the kind of inroads we've made there. According to the Environmental Protection Agency's latest projections, the Republic is set to reduce its greenhouse gas emissions by 29% only by 2030. The report estimates that if the state continued with existing climate policies and took on no further action, it could face fines or costs of between $8 billion and $26 billion. The wide range of the estimate reflects the difficulty in predicting how close the state will get to meeting its climate and renewable energy targets, and the price of emissions permits under the EU's emissions trading system. So what do we do? As I say, there's no point saying this is ridiculous, we shouldn't be involved. We are tied into it by law. It is the rules. We clearly, obviously, we're getting nowhere near the 1 million electric cars. A lot of people would feel there's still there's some brilliant cars out there now. As I mentioned on the show before, electric cars with decent range for 18,000-19,000 euros. Still big money, but people are spending far more on new cars anyway. But people are concerned as to where you might charge them. We need to be using 80% of renewable energy. We're well below that at the moment. And also, the infrastructure that gets the power from the wind farms or the solar farms into your house is not there. So that has to be upgraded as well. And the one thing I've found recently as well, there are grants for, you know, upgrading your property to make it more energy efficient. But it's a struggle to come up with the difference between the cost of the work and the grant. So we've a lot to do. And it's being suggested by those that commissioned this report that the government needs to be starting to invest those billions now into the economy now to get some of this stuff done, rather than still having to do that in 2030, but also having to pay massive fines, 26 billion euro in fines as well. And also in all of that, it's not budgeted. You know, the state hasn't budgeted for these fines yet either. So that still is to come. Right, the Irish Daily Mail. I won't put up with Zelensky for much longer. This story rumbles on. It's on the front of all the pages. Hopes of a Ukraine peace deal were on the brink last night after Donald Trump warned he would not put up with Vladimir Zelensky for very much longer. In his latest diplomatic hand grenade, the US president hinted he could pull the plug on funding for Kyiv altogether after his angry clash with the Ukrainian president. Well, that happened overnight. In case you weren't aware, the United States, who is the biggest backer of Ukraine financially, has paused support for its war efforts pending a review of what its goals are, i.e. is it about trying to find peace. Well, Trump then turned his fire on European countries over their demands for America to provide a security backstop if a peace deal is agreed. His comments come hours after British Prime Minister Keir Starmer told his parliament that he would not send British troops to keep the peace in Ukraine unless the US provides security guarantees. Mr. Trump's intervention was triggered by Mr. Zelensky's warning at the weekend that a deal to end the war is still very, very, very far away. And Trump didn't like that. And he is framing Zelensky as a warmonger. And he effectively said that, and he didn't mention Zelensky by name, but he may as well have. He said effectively, there's one person stopping peace, and if he doesn't get a move on, he'll be removed and won't have a say at all. On to the Irish Daily Star. So all of this talk has ramped up the rhetoric and conversation about Ireland and its defence spend. The Irish Daily Star this morning, the Defence Forces are set to get a new leader just as Ireland and the rest of the European Union embark on a major rearmament scheme. Sources have told the Star the Cabinet will meet to rubber stamp the appointment of a new Chief of Staff as early as this morning. The papers learned that a successor to the current Chief of Staff, Lieutenant General Sean Clancy, has already been selected by a special top-level appointments committee, but the post is so sensitive that the Cabinet has the final say. They're going to decide on that today. They're also going to decide at the Cabinet today, I believe, whether or not to send €100 million to Ukraine. €100 million is on the cards, on the table today. So we'll see if that's obviously all of our money as taxpayers, but I believe the Cabinet are also deciding on that as well. Sources have told the paper that the Brigadier General Rossa Malarkey is expected to be named the new Defence Forces Chief of Staff, which carries a salary of around €200,000 as early as today. And indeed, that is going to happen. Yeah, so just to recap that €100 million, Taoiseach Simon Harris will ask his cabinet colleagues today to approve a plan to provide €100 million in non-lethal military aid to Ukraine this morning. That's a lot of money, isn't it? Ministers will hear €80 million of this money will be committed to procurement partnerships with the EU member states, including Lithuania and Denmark. A further €20 million will go to the Ukraine Defence Contract Group's coalition to increase demining capability and enhance military capability in IT communications and cybersecurity. So by the stroke of a pen, €100 million, and I'm not saying it's right or wrong, by the way, I'm just making sure, you know, it's your money, so you know what's going on. And many people would agree with this, but by the stroke of a pen today, €100 million will exit the coffers of the state and will be sent to support Ukraine today. Right, on to the Irish Independent this morning. And Ireland's among the countries at risk of a major surge in overweight and obesity rates in the next 25 years, according to a new global analysis published today. Now, I thought more and more people were getting healthier, you know, out running and watching their diet and what have you, but it seems we might be going in the other direction. Already, Irish people rank in the top 10 league for high-income countries affecting both children and adults in terms of being overweight. By 2050, 80% of men over the age of 25 in this country will be overweight or obese. 80% of over 25s. The sixth highest in a list headed by Chile, Australia and Greece. This compared to 71% in 2021, the Lancet report reveals. Okay, so as I say, I would have thought that we were heading in the other direction, but clearly not by the looks of things. Right, on to the Sun this morning. And Gardaí hacked into the phone of a man accused of stabbing his wife to death and found video and audio footage of the murderer court heard. This is shocking stuff. The man in court, Stephen Mooney, 52, yesterday pleaded guilty at the Central Criminal Court to the murder of Anna Mooney, 46, at their home in Kilbarrack, Dublin, in June of 2023. Ms. Mooney, a Ukrainian mum of two, died from stab wounds she received in the kitchen. Mooney had been due to stand trial for murder, but on February 7th last, prosecution's senior counsel, Desmond Dockery, told the court of a significant development in the case. Gardaí, he said, seized the accused's phone at the crime scene, but until then were unable to access his contents as they did not have the PIN code or password. However, the Celebrite software that Gardaí used to analyse mobile phones has recently undergone an update that allows phones to be unlocked without a password. And obviously, then, in terms of his defence, once this information was found, he just pled guilty. Interestingly, you may or may not be aware that the Celebrite software that the Gardaí are actually using is a major piece of Israeli technology, and Gardaí pay, I'm not sure if it's the Israel government or the Israel police force, they pay them annually to have access for this Celebrite technology, which was used quite extensively and is being used quite extensively by the Israelis in Gaza to identify their targets. So there's a commonality there between this software, as I say, being used in Gaza, but also being used now by Gardaí for this type of investigation. Right, okay, new guards coming on stream. Fantastic stuff, isn't it? Where are they all going, though? Yes, County Dublin, most of them are in any case. The Irish Daily Star tells us that Garda bosses are sending almost 100 new officers to help police the streets of Dublin. The Irish Mirror has learned two-thirds of the latest recruits, the recruit class, to pass out from the training college in County Tipperary are to be sent to the capital as part of a massive crackdown on street crime. Sources tell the paper that 98 of the 150 new officers will be deployed to the capital And they'll start at the new stations on St. Patrick's Day weekend. And the rest of the 52 then will be spread out around stations around the country. How many Donegal are getting, I don't know. I think, was it two or three we got with the last batch? So we'll see. This off the back of CSO figures that show there has been an increase in certain crimes here in County Donegal. But two-thirds of the new resources are going to County Dublin. It's the capital, I suppose. It's got the biggest concentration of population. Maybe that's exactly where they should be going. Raymond joins us on the programme now. He's got dual citizenship. He's lived in France and in America, but also now living in Ireland. Hi, Raymond.
Good morning, Greg. How's the form?
Things are good. All right, so you've been watching on, like many have, as it relates to what's happening in Europe, in America, across the world. What's your take on, is it Trump's stance on this whole situation, Europe's stance? What's your views?
Greg, there's been a lot of things happened. I noticed this was picked up in one of the Irish papers I saw on Saturday, not the Americans. In the Oval Office, sitting just in back of Zelensky to the right was some gentleman with a big, flashy, ornate sort of heavyweight championship belt on. And I'm, you know, the paper had a circle around it. And I'm kind of wondering, why would somebody bring that into the White House? The body language from Zelensky seemed to be, he stepped into the White House in, if you will, black military fatigue. Mm-hmm. And, you know, before that, he had a meeting with different senior U.S. senators. I mean, these are people, you know, with serious power. And he told them, apparently, he was not going to sign any deal. So, like, what was the purpose of him going into the Oval Office? And it just seemed to be in my mind that he thought he was going into a championship fight in here, and he was going to knock out Donald Trump in here. And I also read in here that previous to that, the American Vice President, J.D. Vance, asked Trump, he said, look, should we keep this private, you know, private conversations with Zelensky? And Trump supposedly responded to him. He said, no, I want the American people to see what's going on in here. And so, you know, there was apparently about 40 minutes of, you know, pleasantries, and then the American vice president brought up that last September, you know, you were in Scranton, Pennsylvania, you know, it was looking at some ammunition plant, and there was a presidential election going on, and basically, you know, Pennsylvania was the key state in the election.
Yeah, that was the opposition.
And you were, you know, yeah. Mm. And you were basically, I mean, he didn't say this, but you had no business being there because you were interfering in American democracy in here. You were trying to influence the election for Joe Biden in here. So, mm-hmm. But I mean, that was Friday, and obviously there's been a lot of fireworks since then. You know, like yesterday, apparently Zelensky said the end of the war is very, very far away. Now, I mean, that's basically, you know, giving two fingers to Donald Trump in here, and he picked that up. And he immediately, apparently in consultation with other people, ordered that all American Pentagon defense shipments to Ukraine are to be, you know, paused, at least temporarily.
Okay. That's the way you framed it, Raymond. Now, I presume you've watched the whole 40, 50 minutes of it as I did. J.D. Vance, well, firstly and foremost, his attire was only raised by, you know, a very, very strong supporter of Donald Trump. It was a gotcha question, really, effectively. The reporter wasn't just asking a question. He was actually expressing an opinion. It was his view that Zelensky disrespected the Oval Office. On that point, no one said anything about the likes of Elon Musk in there with a jacket on, just a T-shirt, and his kid on the shoulders, and his kid telling Donald Trump to shut up. The belt is the WBC belt, which was won by Alexander Usyk. I imagine that was brought to show Donald Trump and J.D. Vance. It's something they're very, very proud of. So you're framing it in a certain way. For me, it seemed, whether I disagree or agree with Donald Trump, it seemed to me that it was actually Zelensky here that was the victim of a setup in cahoots with pro-Trump press And also J.D. Vance, he intervened, and that's what stirred the pot. That would be me objectively looking on, and I mean that hand on heart, objectively looking on, Raymond. That's what I saw unfold.
Well, look, Greg, maybe you're correct. I'm just telling you my humble perspective in here. It's like, yes, I mean, Elon Musk he's in another world. I mean, yesterday I shouldn't say that. Yesterday he called for America to withdraw from NATO.
He wants to go to Mars, so you're not far off. I wouldn't worry about your language. Go ahead about NATO.
Well, Musk is a genius. I'm just an idiot, all right?
Well.
He's got so many fire, or what do you call it, things in the fire. I mean, I'd be lucky if I had one in the fire, you know? You dress in black stuff. That's almost like telling me you're a school shooter and where's the AK-47 assault weapon? That you're missing that.
Yeah, but his country's at war. Let me just flip it. Say he was, this has been his outfit, but let's say he was gallivanting around the world in a suit, with a lovely suit, right? A $3,000 or $4,000 suit, and was there chumming it up. Would he not be criticised then for saying, "Oh well, it's easy for you to fly around the world looking your very, very best, whilst 2,000 young Russian and Ukrainian men were slaughtered this week alone"? Do you know what I mean? It is a bit of a "you're damned if you do and damned if you don't" situation, is it not?
Yeah, Greg. With all due respect, and I'm just a dummy. All right, the issue is here. Do you have any intention of ever settling this thing with Russia?
Now, good question. I don't know.
I have picked up stuff in like, there's an awful lot of disinformation and censorship that goes on all over the place. It goes on in the United States. It most certainly goes on here in Ireland. All right. It goes on in Europe. And it's like, I read somewhere in the last year that back in 1998, that's a long time ago, 98. Mm-hmm. There was a powerful U.S. senator, some guy named Joe Biden, decided he wanted to expand NATO eastwards toward the Russian border. And he got, Congress to go along with him. So he went to Russia finally, and like the Russians weren't exactly pleased. And that started things in here, because the United States, the American Secretary of State, back after the Berlin Wall fell, and the NATO Secretary General had both committed to Putin that NATO would not expand an inch eastward mm-hmm. in here. You know, Warsaw Pact, which is the other side of NATO, I mean, for Russia, on the Russian side, disbanded. Then in 2000, somewhere during Bill Clinton's presidency, Putin at one of these summit type things asked Clinton as U.S. president if Russia could join NATO. Clinton told Putin, "I'll have to talk to my people." Putin then went back to Clinton and said, "Look, we'd like to join NATO." My people said no. All right. And then if you skip forward to around 2014, it was the U.S. State Department and the CIA that effectively, violently overthrew the democratically elected government in Ukraine. They couldn't wait another 2 years for an election. And it just goes on. So like, there are some very, very legitimate beefs, if you will, on the Russian side. And I'm not saying
you don't have to be defensive for being balanced. It is fair to say it takes two to tango, right? And there's an awful lot happened. But also in the intervening time, we can't forget either that Russia did annex Crimea. So that did express an intention. So between 2014 and the beginning of the war, I don't know what was playing out, but you could say that Putin had already sort of demonstrated where he was going with that. I would love to know genuinely, independently, the views of the Ukrainian people that are over there as well, too, because I think, we've got President Zelensky saying what he's saying. We've got the European leaders saying what they're saying. We've got Donald Trump saying what he's saying. We've got Russia saying what they're saying. But what do the people of Ukraine genuinely think now at this stage? What do they want? You know, because we talk about what would we want for this country, and you do that through votes and polls and stuff.
No, like, Greg, what do they want? That's a huge point. Let me just backtrack to Crimea. I read, I don't know, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, that somewhere in the late 1950s, there was a guy named Khrushchev, okay, who was almost, may have been before our times. He got drunk one night and in a drunken stupor gave Crimea to Ukraine. So there's another thing going on there. Now, getting to the Ukrainians, yes, it'd be critical. What do people, Ukrainians actually themselves, believe? I understand that supposedly a third of Ukrainians believe, you know, we want this thing settled. The Russians, you know, we can deal with it. I mean, if you look at historically, going back centuries and centuries, the Russians consider Kyiv to be their mother city. The Russians and the Ukrainians, they're brothers and sisters in the same family. They're first cousins.
But if you look at, say, for instance, a map of Germany after the recent elections, it's very clear the history of that country, that the people of the east of Germany have very different views to the west of Germany, even though they're all part of the one country. And you could also say the same, I think, to some extent in Ukraine, that traditionally speaking, the east of Ukraine, maybe the areas that Russia have an interest in, are more Russian leaning, if that makes sense, rather than Ukrainian leaning. And as I say, I think it's critical that we know exactly what the people of Ukraine want in all of this as well, of all of Ukraine.
Greg, you're totally right. I've never been to Ukraine, so I'm speaking from ignorance. The Russian language is a lingua franca, whatever that, you know, French term is, in eastern Ukraine in here. Now, there's another thing in here. I think it's an English group or maybe an international group called Transparency International. They listed Ukraine. You're talking about countries that are perceived to be corrupt. Ukraine, in the 2024 listing that came out about a month ago, they were listed at 105. Ireland was listed at number 10. So 105 meant you're dealing with a very corrupt country in here.
That's been the barrier to EU membership until such time as this all kicked off. The EU was taking issue with the corruption in Ukraine. That was one of the barriers to their entry into the union, that they had to get their house in order in that regard.
But it's the brown envelope is simply the way of business, and you know, that's going to be close to impossible in here.
So what, Greg, do you think, Raymond? What do you think the solution is here? Do you like Donald Trump's attitude? Do you think that he's just thinking of future relationships, mutually beneficial relationships between Russia and the United States? Do you believe he's trying to ensure that Russia is, sorry, that the United States once again is seeing as a world leader, and he's playing chess with the EU and Russia? What do you actually, as briefly as you can, think is actually happening now, and what do you want to see happen then?
I think, and maybe it's me, he was given Zelensky, if you will, like an exit off one of the motorways here. You know, this thing with rare earth minerals, there's a lot of big ifs here. First, if there are actually rare earth minerals there, and then if it's economically viable, and then if you get to that stage, to open a mine, you're talking 15 years, billions and billions of dollars.
But Zelensky wants, as part of that deal, and we'll have to move on here, as part of that deal, President Zelensky wants a Russian security commitment to keep Russia at bay, in inverted commas, and Donald Trump was not prepared to do that. Is it not shrewd for Zelensky to hold out for that type of security assurance? Do not forget, it's not that long ago that commitments were given to Ukraine that if they gave up their nuclear weapons, they would have protection, amongst them Russia, the UK, and I believe the United States as well. So we could also understand why the Ukrainians might be distrusting unless something is locked in as part of this minerals deal.
No, I understand what you're saying. Trump was viewing, there's an economic agreement. Don't mess with me. I'm now involved in Eastern Ukraine. And that's how he was taken. Now, I don't know, this is sort of radical. If you want to solve something, maybe United States and Russia needs to form an economic treaty organization and be friends rather than everybody being enemies in here.
Well, that's the plan, I think.
Because, you know, Europe has invaded Russia a number of times over the centuries, and they lost 27 million people in World War II. And you know, there was huge sacrifice. They defeated Nazi Germany in large part. And so maybe this is off the wall. I don't know in here. But, like, it's like everybody is looking for blood in here, and it's unfortunate.
All right.
And thousands of young men are dying every week.
That is the part that I really struggle with. How can I sit here in the comfort of the west of Ireland and say that this should continue? I don't have to say goodbye to my two eldest boys and send them out there. I find it very difficult to... I find it very difficult to be too opinionated on it because it's very easy for me in this situation. Raymond, thanks very much indeed. John Vincent Gallagher, thanks for your patience. I just want to make sure to give everyone a fair crack, John, because of you know, people accuse you of cutting off all that kind of stuff. What's your view?
I suppose, firstly, I abhor everything Trump stands for. He's simply a racist, a bully even, and that played out the last day in the Oval Office. His suggestion of what happens to Gaza and I suppose his treatment of women is wholly unacceptable. However, I believe probably the only one time in his life he did something right in his treatment of Zelensky. Zelensky seemingly is tramping around the world, mainly, I suppose, Europe, essentially begging support for his cause, I believe. And when you beg for something, you lack dignity, you lack leadership, you lack self-worth, I believe.
But would you not do anything? Is it John Vincent or John, do I call you? Sorry, John Vincent?
Yeah, doesn't matter. No.
Okay, John. So, but if you believed that the future of your country was at stake, would you not go around the world on your hands and knees begging for support?
I believe if your struggle is worthy and is a genuine one, support will come without your begging. I believe also that people of like think of like minds will join together and support you. You don't see Hamas or Hezbollah or Islamic Jihad running around the world begging for support. The people in the main falling behind them and they're supportive of Palestine and the Palestinian people. So I can't grasp. In that context, I believe Trump was right. You have an individual that seemingly expects and has no real gratitude to the support that he has been given. I suppose, furthermore, and your earlier contributor kind of alluded to that, or indeed perhaps it was you that alluded to that Zaporizhzhia, Donetsk, Luhansk, and I suppose also Crimea, but Kherson, are all, there's a brave majority of ethnic Russians, I think, in Donetsk and Luhansk, there's towards 40%.
And what's your point in relation to that? Population. What's the significance of that in your view?
This is the point I was making. So you could argue that Putin... For me, I don't believe it was an invasion. I believe Russia went in to protect their people.
Okay, so with that in mind, John, and I'm not being argumentative, okay, let's take Ireland as an example. Britain took and retains six counties of this country, close on 50% of the population perhaps would be in favour of staying within the United Kingdom. Then our claim to have a united Ireland, those that have that claim, is unjust.
I don't. Well, you're slightly going off on a tangent.
No, I'm just trying to draw. I'm trying to draw. I'm trying to draw geographical comparisons, Justin. Historical comparisons, John.
I'm a socialist Republican, so therefore I believe in a 32-county Irish socialist republic, and your utterance is slightly going off on a tangent on that one. There's 70%. Of those regions, up to 70% in some places, 75% speak Russian. So therefore, there obviously is an affinity to be aligned with Russia. Also, I think as an Irish people, our allegiances or our leaning should be towards Russia, because the 1916 Rising, I suppose, was the first socialist or communist rising in the world. The 1917 Russian Revolution or Bolshevik Revolution led by Vladimir Ilyich Lenin was the first successful socialist or communist revolution. And indeed, Lenin had massive respect for James Connolly and his thinking and his protection of workers and his protection of people's rights and freedoms and civil liberties in general. So I have a belief that as an Irish, as a people, our leaning should be towards Russia, not pandering to essentially a Jewish Ukrainian. It's difficult to believe or to assess or comprehend how people are unwilling to see Putin's reason. I suppose also...
But I mean, it depends on... Just in relation to that, right, 75% of Ukraine is made up of Ukrainians and speaking Ukrainian. You know, it is a minority. If you want to make it... If you want to sort of... Not you, a person wanting to sort of progress their argument, then they could start comparing a certain part of Ukraine. But if you take Ukraine as a whole, like the point I was trying to make, taking Ireland as a whole, the overwhelming majority are Ukrainians. And it's been a country that's been invaded and divvied up for absolutely years. And this is just the current manifestation of the same thing. Russia wanted its share of Ukraine.
But in this instance, I suppose it's kind of twofold. Putin's wanting to go into the four regions and his annexation of Crimea, 9 years ago, 2014. I suppose in many ways it's twofold. One, the protection of ethnic Russians and those regions are predominantly Russian speaking. So therefore, in that context, also I believe had Zelensky not suggested Ukraine join NATO, I believe also there's that possibility that Putin wouldn't have gone and attempted to.
But John, I find it interesting that, and I only find it interesting. I'm not disputing it. I don't find it wrong because I don't know enough. But from an Irish perspective, you're very strong in the fact that Ireland should be complete. And its island you'd be very strongly opposed to what Israel is doing in Palestine. You'd be very much in support of Palestine retaining its Gaza, retaining its integrity. So that's Ireland and that's Gaza. But when it comes to Ukraine trying to retain its integrity, you're siding with the oppressor. And I'm even listening intently to you. I can't fully understand why that's your position when your position on what Israel is doing and what the British have done is very different.
I don't necessarily see Russia as the oppressor, as the oppressor. Again, you was it you or your earlier contributor referenced Ukraine being one of the more corrupt nations in the world.
That's statistically true. That's just a fact. It's a statement of fact that it is.
It's a fact. So therefore, a fact is essentially the truth. But on another or on a wider aspect, in the early 60s, I think it was 62, 63, when Khrushchev suggested putting missiles on the island of Cuba, 70, 80 miles off the American coast. Kennedy wasn't too affable to the idea, so I find it difficult to think that Putin should have been accepting to have having a NATO country on his border.
All
right. NATO, and I know, have no need to tell you this, NATO is an aggressive organization.
Yeah. I get you. I understand where you're coming from, Tom, but we do enjoy our freedoms, and you know, there are those that would very much like to take them away. I do have to move on, though. That's John Vincent Gallagher. Thank you for your time. Back after a break. Northwest MEP, MEP Kieran Mullooly joins me now. Good morning, Kieran. Thank you for your time.
Greg, good morning. Good morning to you and to your listeners.
Right. Now, you're talking of protections for any potential deployment of soldiers from this country, but of course our local interest is Finnair Camp to Ukraine.
That's right, Greg. It's a big morning here in the European Parliament in Brussels. You may have heard in the last half an hour, the European President, Ursula von der Leyen, has confirmed that after yesterday's events, when the US effectively pulled out of their support for Ukraine, we're going to see an 800 billion euro European fighting fund to support Ukraine in what's coming up. That will inevitably mean a part for Irish soldiers, I believe, in the peacekeeping side of events. Not in the on the front line in any respect. I don't think that's going to happen. But it certainly will mean that the Europe will look to us, and the United Nations inevitably will look to us to put our troops in a position whereby they'll support the peacekeeping measure. And I believe now is the time for us to strategically stake what we want in this. That's why I spoke to President Emmanuel Macron last Wednesday in Paris, and I asked him specifically to ensure that our troops, let it be from Finnair Camp or Custom Barracks in Athlone or from whatever part, are located in strategic inland positions. That means the Odessa port, it means Kyiv, it means locations away from the Russian border, so to speak, because I can tell you, Greg, this is hotting up. The pace of this has changed dramatically in the last few days, and I believe now is the time for Ireland to stake its own clear, neutral position of what's coming up.
Well, if we wanted to truly claim that, we don't go there at all.
Well, I would disagree with you on that front because, as you know, and your listeners know, Ireland has played a key role in the United Nations peacekeeping operations going back to 1957. Yeah. We have, our soldiers have put their themselves on the line in ensuring that peace is maintained. And that's what we want here. We want peace. We want to ensure that if there is some type of a truce or a settlement in the coming weeks, which I think inevitably there's going to have to be, some type of a, that phrase you've heard before, Greg, that occupied territories phrase is going to happen again here. It's an inevitable, I think, in many people's eyes, that there will be the Russian invasion will stop, but that there'll be some type of a line drawn in the sand or otherwise in the course of whether Ukraine like it or not, or it looks like that at the moment. In those circumstances, we must have independent United Nations peacekeepers involved. That's the only way we believe it's
but
it's
I don't think
past,
I don't think
yeah
but will Vladimir Putin accept that? I don't think he sees Europeans as honest brokers in this situation.
He certainly doesn't see some of his UN countries involved. Let's be straight about it. When this goes to a true situation, if it goes to a conflict situation, he will be principally watching what's happening in regard to UK French forces. It's the English and the French who will be involved. They're soldiers. They've set it on the ground. They're going to put the boots on the ground in Europe on this. They're going to put the planes in the air. They're the countries he will be principally watching. But this does not take away for the necessity for the United Nations to come in here, as it has done in the past. For all of its problems, the United Nations has been able to pass resolutions in the past where we can get significant numbers of peacekeepers on the ground as well, playing an important role. And I'm not talking about some of the stuff that von der Leyen is talking about this morning, Greg. She's talking about putting 150 billion euro together in new missiles, ammunition, drones. I'm not talking about that. I'm entirely
against Ireland
taking
any part in that. But we would also be,
but
we will be expected to contribute to that. We obviously, we're talking as the triple lock is going to probably be scrapped. You know, our neutrality is somewhat in question. I know the government has said that Ireland shouldn't join any military alliances, but the government does seem to want Ireland to take part in EU military missions. So we're moving in that direction. Now we're trying to cherry pick where we are in Ukraine. I don't believe that might happen. It does feel a little bit like our neutrality is unraveling here.
I think we're going to have the first serious debate on neutrality for a long time, because it's going to be a working example of how we are involved or otherwise. I, for one, I'm in favour of maintaining our neutrality in this. I have no interest in our troops being involved at any stage in the provision of missiles or ammunition or anything like that. I think most people in Ireland are of the same situation. But we cannot stand by, Greg. We cannot stand by if we're called upon in a peacekeeping
Are you sure we can't? Are you sure we can't use our neutrality to be a broker, to not be a side taker, to actually show us an example of what can be achieved through conversation and agreement? You know, why can't we actually roll back a little bit and be neutral and use our neutrality as brokers of peace, rather than, you know, trying to make out we're some sort of part of some sort of European army here? You know, what is wrong with that? That's what I believe that's what the people of Ireland want. This is not a fait accompli. I don't think we should debate it as it is. You know, let's have a conversation about maybe we need to backtrack a little bit and also become politically neutral.
I think history has shown, Greg, that where in the past the world has stood by and while nations determined and absolutely overboard on conflict have gone ahead, that it has not been a good outcome for the world.
Well, what nation is overboard on conflict? Who are you talking about?
At this point in time, we are in the third year of an invasion by the Russians on Ukraine. You know that. How far can you go down the road in terms of bringing forward conflict in the world? You've seen it. You've seen thousands of refugees come to our country and come to Donegal and all over the world. They are not going back. They've made it clear they won't stop. And if you come to a place such as the European Parliament this morning and you sit beside people from the Baltic states and you sit beside the Polish MEPs, I can tell you, Greg, they are in fear as we speak that the next stage of this will be an invasion into their territory.
Okay.
It is historically proven in the past that by standing by and doing nothing in a situation like this, we are leaving ourselves open to further attack and further
invasion. All right,
I don't believe the vast majority of people in Ireland actually wanted to do it. If you look at our support,
but can I just say one thing here? Yeah, okay. Just very briefly, though, Russia aggression, the only way to deal with that is to arm ourselves up to the teeth and for Ireland to get involved in some sort. Where is the diplomacy, though? Where is the make it very much have diplomacy and make it very much in the interest of Russia not to advance on other Baltic nations, for an example? You know, for me to take your argument, I have to presume that you are correct, that Russia is actually intent on taking over Eastern Europe and beyond. Surely there are diplomatic ways to avoid that rather than meeting fire with fire.
I think you're quite right. You saw it on Sunday. You asked me, where is the diplomacy? The diplomacy happened in London on Sunday around a table with, 10 prime ministers. The European Commission president was there as well, outlining the strategic role involved in this. And it was very clear. Only two people at the table had showed their hands and said they were going to have boots on the ground. The French and the UK are going to do this. The Irish role is key, but is also key to this. And several other countries, I might add, we are going to need further troops on the ground in Ukraine, but in a peacekeeping role.
Right.
Whether we like this phrase or not, you're going to hear it, Greg. Occupied territory is going to be a phrase we're going to hear. We've heard it so much over Gaza, we're going to hear it again coming up, because it's coming down the line.
Okay.
And if we just stand by and do nothing, I can tell you we will regress it
in terms of our
future foreign policy.
Thank you so much for your time. I greatly appreciate it. Sorry if it comes across that I'm rushing you along, but I am, because we have to take a break for the news and obituary notices. The news will be a little bit late. Coming up afterwards, we've got the very latest appeals and information from Ungada Shiakana and much more.